For WAMC News, I'm Jim Lavoulis. The Indigenous Values Initiative is hosting a virtual conference series starting tonight to discuss the impacts of the Discovery Doctrine, a concept outlining how the colonial powers claimed lands starting in the 15th century. The initiative is a nonprofit based in central New York and is dedicated to promoting the values of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. I spoke with founding board member Sandy Bigtree, a member of the Mohawk Nation, about the upcoming conference.
We're focusing on the doctrines of Christian discovery because that really gets at the very base of the problem that Indigenous people face all over the world. And these were documents that were written in the 15th century, 1452, the Dum Diversus, which was when the Pope wrote a decree for all Catherine's sovereigns to capture, vanquish, and subdue all non-Christian people all over the world, wherever they would send their discoverers during the Age of Discovery. Non-Christians were considered actual enemies of Christ. And these discoverers were ordered to seize all the lands, put the people in perpetual slavery, take all their possessions. So this is what underlies the justification of genocide that happened in Africa first in 1452, and then in the Americas, when a second papal bull was written in 1493, only 6 weeks after Columbus got back to Spain and notified the Vatican and monarchs that there was gold here. And so that's when the second Inter Soterra was written, and that would apply to the seizing of all the lands in the Americas by Spain. So then it transferred, these same tenants transferred in 1823 into U.S. property law through Chief Justice John Marshall's majority opinion in the case of Johnson v. McIntosh. And that solidified that any Indian lands could never again be returned to sovereign status once they were taken by the Christian authority or government here. So we just want people to begin to learn and understand what this country represents, and that these horrific genocidal documents underlie the rule of law in this country and all over the world. It's what corporations act under today, these principles of dominion over Indigenous people, where they feel they have the right to just go in and confiscate all the minerals, pollute all the waters, and leave the Indigenous peoples of the lands sick. And we have worked with all kinds of Christian organizations for several years. We've held several of these conferences, and we have a lot of churches that are trying to disclaim this doctrine. They're horrified that this is what underlies the religion they have grew up believing was of all goodness, because it's really underlying genocide. And what's tied to this is, I'll take it back to the Scano Center, this site that we were able to repurpose. When that site was opened originally in 1933, I want to note that this was during the rise of fascism in this country. And there was a strong force developing all over the United States. And it was during this time that all those Columbus statues were going up all over the country. And we have one particularly egregious statue here in Syracuse. And it went up the year after they built the replica of that French fort that celebrated the Christianization of the Onondaga, which did not happen.
And Sandy, you did bring up the Columbus statue, and with the highest profile action perhaps being the Washington Redskins removing that moniker from their team name, there is clearly a larger renewed focus on how Indigenous people are depicted right now. First off, do you agree with the move by the team?
Oh, absolutely. And seeing you brought up the Columbus statue here, let me just give a brief narrative on that. That went up the year after our French fort went up. There was a sculptor enlisted in Florence from the Italian community here in Syracuse who was hired to sculpt this statue of Columbus. But seeing it follow the Depression, this community fell short of the funds to get it returned. So Mussolini got involved, the fascist dictator at the time of Italy. He got involved. He actually paid for the shipment to have it returned. But he also had it enlarged, and he also insisted that it be inscripted with Cristoforo Colombo, discoverer of America, on the front, so it'd be very prominently displayed. So I think it's interesting that it was during this time of fascism that these statues were going up because of what Columbus represents. And Columbus is the face of the doctrines of discovery to barge into non-Christian lands and claim ownership. So this is a detrimental image for everybody, whether you're native or not, because it represents world domination and the subversion of people who have a different way of living on this earth. It was a way of living that was in balance with the natural world, and they took that very seriously, knowing you cannot be well if you're not going to be in balance. Your mind cannot be healthy. You can't even think good thoughts if you are abusive to the earth that sustains our lives. So, yes, it's particularly egregious that these statues are standing and looking at us in the face. This statue in Syracuse, Columbus stands atop four severed Indian heads right below his feet, facing the four directions. And Columbus himself faces west, and his gaze goes through our largest Catholic cathedral in Syracuse, Church of the Immaculate Conception. And behind this statue, Columbus is backed by our courts of law. It's our city courthouse. And so it's very symbolic, maybe more so than anywhere else in the country. But this site is really horrific. And then at the bottom of the obelisk upon which Columbus stands is a white stone canoe, but it's been broken, because the obelisk goes right through the white stone canoe. And that was our message of peace, and that represents being in balance with the natural world. So it's a very antagonistic, egregious statue that we've had to look at since 1933.
Now, looking at your biography, your grandfather was part of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. Now, some people have argued that show exploited Native Americans for entertainment, but others have said it allowed Native Americans to showcase their culture and heritage at a time when American society was trying to get them to conform to Anglo ways. Sandy, do you see any parallels to that today?
Well, okay. What the show did was solidify the stereotypical Indian with the Sioux in headdress, because it was right. It had just followed a Wounded Knee and the Wounded Knee massacre. So there was gold discovered in that region, and again wanted to project west through the rest of the land. So Buffalo Bill played out these Indian wars and battles. There was no cultural exchange. What he did was stereotype all of us into this thing of cowboys and Indians. My grandfather was in the show because he was taken from home and put in an Indian boarding school at Thomas Indian School. When my great-grandpa found out, my great-grandpa was out west working on the railroads and sending money home to his wife. But my grandpa was still taken away from the home and put in the school. So my great-grandpa came back, got him out of the school, and put him on a ship. He was a kid. Put him on a ship to England to drum in Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. And then they also put him in charge of the Dancing Bear, to watch the Dancing Bear. So, you know, my family, my aunts, who have now passed, they thought the craft he learned in boarding school, he was like one of the best cobblers they knew of. Well, that has no relevance to being Mohawk in our culture. You know, maybe he could make a living, but I always thought, you know, to be proud of him being a cobbler, and he was like distanced from his traditions. And then he grew up in England, detached from his community, and so that when he went back home to live, it was foreign to him, and he was not embraced as he was before he was taken away as a child. So it's a painful history in our family, and, you know, I don't see benefit coming out of the Buffalo Bill show. It always made my spine curl that my grandpa was part of it, and it wasn't until I was an adult that I understood why he was in that show, and it was to escape the boarding school situation.
Sandy Bigtree is a member of the Mohawk Nation and a founding board member of the Indigenous Values Initiative. Sandy, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, yes, and please tune in tonight. We have a whole variety of speakers from all over the world. It'll be running for 3 weeks every Thursday, next Thursday, and then the following Thursday. Visit our website, indigenousvalues.org, for more information.